Hello and welcome to Make It Experiential, the podcast that explores the world of experiential and the key trends coming up in the next 6 to 12 months that make this world so exciting and interesting. My name is Franco Boydell. I'm the head of growth for the IUF Group, and I'm joined by my colleague, Andy.
Hey, I'm head of creative for the IUF Group, and I have 20 years creative experience from digital design, product photography, and experiential.
Today, we're looking at communities and the role of experiential within the wider marketing mix. With over 70% of people saying that they would rather experience a brand through a live event or an activation, today we're going to interrogate why, because we usually take this as gospel. And actually, in a world where social plays a very real component in a brand's world and in a consumer's engagement of that brand, the reason why people would then choose to congregate or to gravitate towards a live experience does deserve some questioning and some exploration. So perhaps in 2025, the combination of both the reach of a campaign and how real a campaign is more important than ever. And to help us explore this topic, I'm very pleased that we've got Natasha Brody in the building. Natasha is from Scene Presents, the agency who make the intangible tangible. Welcome, and please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you, and thanks for having me. Yeah, so as you said, I work for Scene Presents. And just to give a bit of clarity on what we mean by making the intangible tangible, we work for brands like Netflix, TikTok, and Amazon. They're tech brands that you can't physically feel. So our brand proposition and our expertise is about bringing them to life, creating brand worlds and creating immersive experiences in and around those products, whether it's bringing a Netflix brand IP to life, whether it's Bridgerton or Squid Games, or whether it's for TikTok, obviously they've got lots of different products. And how do we bring consumers and creators in those worlds and create interesting immersive experiences that are going to get them to want to engage with it, but also want to share about it afterwards?
Awesome. Thank you very much. What we want to do is start by trying to define the concept of a community. Mm-hmm. You know, the brands that you mentioned have some of the most well-known IPs on the market at the moment, and you know, they are the new water cooler moments, right? This is what we talk about when we sit at our desks or when we're with our mates at the pub. And in some sense, that, you know, we're the community, we're talking about it there, but then the audiences that you're putting on these immersive events for, maybe let's start there. What separates the audiences who are attending your immersive events kind of compared to the everyman? Kind of what makes the audiences or the community side of any of the kind of Squid Games or the Netflix mm-hmm. house kind of different?
Yeah, super interesting question. I think the lines between the digital, physical and experiences have blurred, right? So we're now, what's super exciting for us as an agency, we're in like the advent of the experience world. I think that with the fragmentation of social media, that has allowed more than ever communities to evolve, right? And that's in different passion points. So therefore, what's happening when we're creating events is we're designing for specific communities, and whether that's in music or whether that's in technology, we design for them. I think they are the co-creators. So when we're inviting people down, we're really thinking about how to design an event that they're going to want to be a part of. I think also the amplification of the events are super important, especially take, for example, what H&M have just done with Charlie XCX over the summer. They've created a series of events, right, that specifically are talking to a fan base of music, a community of music fans for Charlie. And they have done a series of events, all of which do different things. So some are secret events. They wiped their social prior to the events taking place and created like teasing assets that are like creating this FOMO for people who want to go. They had designed the event specifically for social and for those communities of fans that are then going to share that out. And also then they created events specifically for the fans. So look what they did with the takeover in New York, right? It was absolutely incredible. She announced it the day before. They 33,000 people in Times Square takeover of the street. So that makes the fans the co-creators, and that gives them the kind of global amplification that they need. You don't necessarily need influencers, although they were there. That, you know, that is really talking to the community.
Absolutely. And I think the behind the scenes point about how much planning would go into what, from the audience perspective, is sort of a kind of what I'm looking for. Not last minute, but for them it feels very raw, and it's just happened, and it's kind of, you know, happening in real time. Mm. But actually, I guess the world of, you know, experiential agencies is all about that planning.
100%.
And
yeah,
making sure that it's going to be safe. It's going to be, you know, I think, well, if talking about someone like Charlie XCX, it's going to be well attended. That's going to be enough. Mm. But really building the buzz in the right way.
I think it's super important, right? I think that it might feel raw and that they've just dropped it, but I think well considered integrated omnichannel campaigns are where kind of the direction of experiential is going. And sometimes we're asked, like, what's the ROI of experiential? Done right, it can be phenomenal. There's so many channels now where you can create different conversations with consumers across multiple different platforms, whether it's like, you know, Addy Club, you know, for Adidas and their kind of VIP customers, whether it's in-store sending interactive messages while people are shopping, whether it's at the event, having VIP areas that those VIP customers can go to. That strategy takes months of planning. Mm-hmm. And believe me, there are, you know, that is probably integrated agencies working super close together as one holistic team to make sure there's a seamless strategy at the heart of that that probably seems really reactive, but it's not. And that's the power of brand experience.
And do you think that in the experiential age where social is as real as real life, mm-hmm. it feeling raw reactive is more important than ever for, like, the audiences?
It really depends on the brief. What is the client trying to achieve? You know, we're seeing quite a big trend now for this, like, let's tease it in a clever way. Let's tease it in a way where we're, like, revealing the venue's a secret, or, you know, how do we gamify the social experience in the run-up to it? And that in itself is an experience. Like, you've seen brands where they're, you know, Cortez, where they're dropping trainers and they're creating, you know, mass hysteria in the street. That's also planned, right? That's not just come out of nowhere. It really depends on the brand objectives and who the brand is that's right for, you know, what happens.
And, you know, we don't need to name any names, but do you ever experience brands who, you know, aren't really appropriate for, you know, hype, hysteria, secret drops, trying to lean into that world? And does that become, you know, culturally inappropriate?
I think it's about truly understanding cultural zeitgeist and cultural capital. And I think that brands that really want to do it right need to kind of really understand, whether it's the music landscape, it needs to feel authentic to that brand. So whether that's Adidas turning up in music, it feels right for them, right? Or whether it's H&M tapping into Charlie's fan base, that those brands authentically come together. You can imagine Charlie's fan base wearing H&M.
Yeah.
Much like our client Netflix, where they're creating brand experiences for the fans, it makes sense.
Absolutely. And we spoke earlier about Netflix's kind of the strength of the IPs and how important it is to stay true to the kind of brand worlds. Mm. You know, Bridgerton's a really good example with the level of fan fiction and online communities that would be, you know, totally pure and, you know, purists to the story and for which characters would, you know which ones, and the outfits all coming together. And I guess if anything is out of place, then in the experiences that are put together, then that's going to get recognized and called out and it becomes inauthentic.
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot, obviously, with Netflix. And, you know, when we're building anything around Bridgerton, we're working with Shondaland. That's her baby, right? So, you know, we not only are Netflix our client, really they are too, so that we're making sure that the lore of that world is absolutely true to that. And actually, Netflix strategy now for the next however many years is fan first, because they know that they understand the power of fan. They understand the power of community around their kind of IPs. And actually, this year they're opening Netflix House, right, which is bringing all their IPs together under one roof to create an experience for multiple different fans that's got tech and the IPs, you know, all coming together as one kind of fan experience. And there's loads of examples of that where you're seeing more and more. You know, you only need to look at F1 as an example, right? They have taken what was kind of probably quite a stale property and elevated it, you know, creating partnerships in fashion, music, art. Lego, for example, just did a massive experience all around F1. Understanding the power of fandom now is probably more important than ever. And that's what's creating this social buzz around experiences and gives it the ROI that you couldn't possibly kind of get with just an above the line campaign.
Absolutely. And
yeah. I was just going to say, yeah, it's like Coors Light used to like sponsor Channel 4 comedy. Mm-hmm. And so they can do that in a obviously digital advertising way for when it's on TV or streaming. But then the next step is obviously then the beer at a comedy festival, right? Mm-hmm. And then so they're tapping in, they're actually building, like, we're part of the comedy, like, scene. community mm-hmm. scene kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think the term fan first is going to be something which we try and kind of, you know, narrow in on in our work, because it, for a long time, we've spoken about kind of, you know, user experience, or you've spoken about kind of the importance of, you know, audiences and communities. But actually now, whether it is F1 or whether it is mm-hmm. a fashion brand, for example, fandom is possible outside of the more traditional channels of what I've always seen as like the macro communities, like the most obvious ones, kind of music and sports. But now, you know, when you've got sustainability or technology, like, you've got purists in those spaces, and they will seek out and hopefully find any sort of brand who's kind of collaborating or doing work in that space.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, there's still a massive role for creators, right? We, for example, last year we did, at the end of last year, we did an event to launch the final season of Married at First Sight, right? Brilliant brief, couldn't be more excited when it came through the door. And that was basically to create excitement and drive a buzz around the fact that it was coming. So we invited all the MAFS cast. They literally argued from one side of the room to the other. It was wild watching it. But then we obviously gave some of the true MAFS fans the chance to come along. Like, you know, they're getting behind the scenes. They're seeing this firsthand. But there was also creators there, right? Because they're then going to have a slightly bigger reach. So I think it's about strategically having micro influencers, and a scalable set of creators, really thinking about who you're inviting so that you're covering all bases, right?
Definitely. And, you know, to use MAFS as an example, which is just, you know, captured the, you know, the national attention.
Yeah.
I guess the idea of having everyone from basically influencers who've got that reach, who are involved in culture in a really wide range of ways, down to your super fans who mm-hmm. in their networks will be an authority on that subject. And for them, this is the one thing of the year that is like perfectly in their scope. I guess, is it just finding a way to get all of these people together and, you know, creating the most relevant in-person audience to push your campaign?
100%. I mean, and, you know, like, each brand experience that we do is slightly different and the brief's slightly different. Volvo came to us, we worked with CAA last year to do a campaign around the House of Volvo. They were launching a new car and they wanted to bring in a younger demographic to the brand. So we created an experience which was designed, it was basically creator first. So we had 225 creators staggered over the course of 2 days to come down. And they called their different kind of car interiors rooms. And so we designed four different rooms around the four different fabrications of the car. So one was around recycled denim. One was around kind of the material had pine at the heart of it. So in one room you had like this forest experience where you could hear the sounds of the forest, you could smell the sounds of the forest, and you went in and you had a pine oil workshop. And in the other room we had one of their brand ambassadors, Annie, doing a shishiko workshop. Then we created, as seen a Northern Lights experience that kind of you sat on cushions and you're relaxed and we're kind of taking people into the world of, you know, obviously it's a Scandinavian brand. So for that, like that was designed for creators in mind to create content at every point. So it just, it you design for the brief.
I think touching on the idea there of the senses, and mm-hmm. it's the exact opposite of what you can't get through an online community, which is a tangible kind of sensory takeaway from attending something live, right?
Yeah, and we always talk about at Scene Presents, how do you want people to feel? You know, what's your first gig you ever went to? Do you remember it?
Yeah, well, the most memorable first one would probably be Pendulum playing at in Split in Croatia.
And do you remember how you felt?
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. So we're always trying to think about how do you want people to feel when they come to the event, and tapping into those five senses is always going to help you design around that. Now, not every area of the event needs that, but we're really thinking about that at the heart of the brief. You know, like, for example, we were doing a B2B event for you for TikTok. And one of the areas that we had for guests was we brought to life Tube Girl at the time, which was a major social trend on TikTok, right? So we recreated the tube. So people, we had wind blowing and, you know, people then could create their own content in Tube Girl's tube. And then she came down, right? So again, that's, you know, we're tapping into the senses of emotion because people really love her. But like going back to the, obviously the Volvo example, that is really, each room was designed with that in mm-hmm. mind. And I think the thing is with the power of emotion, it, with the power of the senses, you're going to remember that. You know, your brain can kind of pull down the memory more quickly than it would if it was just a static event.
So I think that one of the greatest, you know, peeves of ours will be when experiential is almost added on as like a bolt-on or a kind of afterthought mm-hmm. to a wider campaign. I guess what would you then think is kind of the gold standard of how experiential should be part of that integrated mix?
My God, we have this conversation so many times, like why are we bought in so late? I think that it's such a big mistake. Like we should be sitting at the table around an integrated agency conversation or an in-house brand with a brand team to strategize around what's going to make this work the hardest, right? How are we going to sweat it? There isn't a cookie cutter example. There isn't a like cookie cutter way of doing it. But I think that the more you look at kind of the channels that you want it to work on and how what that can then say. So let's take Spotify's Unwrapped example that happens every year. You know, obviously they need to evolve it every year and take consumers, excite people. So this year, for example, that was truly integrated. They knew the types of artists they wanted to promote, right? That had been like coming out on top from kind of the Unwrapped campaign. So they created bespoke social assets that they rolled out online. And then, for example, in London, in the UK, they took over Outernet, which is actually, we're a preferred partner of theirs to create brand experiences, and create an immersive experience for fans who could come along to the event. They could look at different big stats and facts around kind of Spotify music artists, etc. But also they use technology at the heart of it. So you could tap a QR code and bring up a personal experience on the screen. An example of this is something that we did for TikTok Live, where we were briefed to deliver a series of events around a global competition. Obviously, that global competition was running for 2 months, so we worked with them really closely to create a suite of assets around the event that they could integrate into their comms pre. We were working with talent, so as part of that talent contracting, we also had them. We had them doing lives, talking about the fact that they were doing the event. We then seeded out social content on their channels. One of them had 38 million views, which is obviously amazing. Overall, we had 383 million views on the overarching campaign content. But at the heart of the brief was actually really interesting, was how do we design an experience for live creators? And we talk about creators a lot, but the live creators are totally different. They are creators that are holding their fans 24/7. So we really had to think about how do you create an experience for them? and that's where technology was super interesting, because we had to really think about, we gave them RFID tags so that at every point, whether it was checking in for their coat, whether it was having a drink, whether it was being part of an immersive experience, we were really celebrating them. So one of the things that we did was create this globe, and as they entered the experience, we had about 30 different iPads, and as they touched in, their personal content came up on the screen, like they're going to film it, they're going to talk about it. We then had another point where they could go and tap the wall, and via the data that we had in their RFID tag, their name then came up behind them. So again, they're going to create content around that. So we're really, it's about curating for the audience.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to ask a question on that, that kind of screen globe that you created. So that was all their own content, right? And that, so it was like an individual moment?
Pre-programmed,
yeah.
They don't know that, but yeah. Obviously we work really closely with TikTok to gather content that then would come up. So it's hours of work. It feels quick,
yeah.
But it's not. But obviously the tapping of the experience where their name came up, obviously in the back end we've got their name. So that RFID technology recognises that person's bespoke RFID tag, and then it comes up.
Great. I think the that integration of technology is really interesting when we talk about, I guess, value exchange, because the Spotify example that you gave, and you know, one of the most popular parts of this is people understanding their stats. And it's really interesting that, you know, culturally we would be so interested in our almost like metrics to do with something, you know, how obsessed am I? How much?
Yeah, my habits change like on the lead up to that, in terms of like, I've listened to too much pop, so I need a bit more experimental electronic, and I'm forced myself to listen to it, so then it has an effect on.
And then when we put it up, we all think that you're really creative, and
yeah, definitely. Then I go back to the Kylie pop stuff. Yeah,
I think personalization, customization is now critical, right, at the heart of a consumer facing event. Everyone wants something that's true to them, which is why brand experiences work so well, because you're bringing people into the brand world in an authentic way and creating something that's right for them. So the Spotify example's perfect, because you're amplifying something that's really, truly they're passionate about, music. You know, most people love music, and being able to see it viscerally in a kind of like engaging way in a, you know, fantastic London venue is something that everyone is going to want to share.
We did this project with Disney for their 100-year anniversary, and this was a case where we used RFID and kind of user identifiers throughout the journey. And it was a really good way of the fans, because obviously Disney's have one of the best fandom out there, but it took them into the experience, because they were being asked questions about their friendship with their group in the language of each of the IPs. So,
yeah.
You know, is your friendship Hakuna Matata or something in the Lion King room? And then basically we took all that data and then pushed it through so that everyone got this kind of unique piece of content at the end. I had all of their stats and their different engagements throughout the different brand worlds to see which ones they're kind of more into. I think that if you've got the opportunity to make the technology a way to make it personal, but it shouldn't, you know, it doesn't feel like it's layered on top. It feels like it's inherently part of your experience.
Yeah, we always talk about tech. It shouldn't be tech for tech's sake, right? It needs to feel truly authentic to the experience. But just picking up on the point that you made about kind of that value exchange and data, you know, obviously there is quite a lot of unease now with social media, and like obviously people are feeling a lot of pressure online. There's a lot of fakes out there, et cetera, et cetera, and people are a bit more nervous about sharing their data. But to ensure that they're comfortable with that value exchange is really important. And whether it is what you've talked about with the RFID tags, or us with live, for example, or you're going to an event, that value exchange needs to be something that is giving them back. So you're seeing more and more now like brand experiences where you're inviting people in, and in exchange for their data, people are being given makeovers. Or I think where brands are doing it really well is actually they're creating an experience for the community. Makeup and ref is a fine example, where they're bringing brands into test products, right? And then they're using that that information to then roll that out as a brand campaign. They're making the fans like truly feel like part of the brand, and that's why it's working so well. So I think that really thinking about the role of data and why you're asking for that data and then what you're going to do with it is super important, so that people coming feel safe and they don't feel like you're just taking it for the sake of it. Now, when you're looking at it from a B2B point of view, sometimes you're doing it from a like, what did you feel before and after, or did they get the message? Have they come away understanding the business problem that we're trying to solve? So there's different uses of data across different kind of, I suppose, examples, but I think that's really important now to really think about that.
And, you know, talking of kind of B2B communities, I guess the way that you've defined kind of the fandom market, you've defined the creator market, I guess if there was some kind of key insights for that B2B audiences that kind of mean that the experiences kind of sing best for them, you know, could you give us any examples?
Yeah, I mean, at Scene Presents, we don't really look at B2B as any different to normal consumers, right? But I suppose what we're trying to do there, so for example, we do a lot of work for TikTok's GBS division, which is their business division, essentially. And we're trying to always make sure in TikTok's all about joy, right? So how do we, in a joyful way, land product messaging? But that is about designing something that's interesting and engaging, that doesn't feel like we're slamming a product or a business message down their throat, right? So going back to, for example, where we took TikTok to Cannes for the first time, we had a series of like interactive walls where kind of you'd pick up things and look at different kind of brand stats and facts, or whether that's kind of like content that you put headphones on and you're engaging with and it feels quite personal to you. Obviously like fireside chats and stuff like that, bringing in different speakers. So I think it's about making sure there's still that entertainment value, but really heroing the brand's kind of core essence, and making sure you're not losing that in how you're bringing it to life is super important. And even down to the F&B, right? You know, when we're inviting that kind of business audience in, we're still creating really exciting F&B offerings. So for example, at one of the events we did, we had like a taco station and we had like a pub that they could go to. And like, you know, that's still creating talkability. It's still a fun experience. We had a graffiti artist there where people go and create personalized T-shirts and they're taking something away with them. So it's about doing it in a way that they still feel like brand fans, but they're going away understanding a core product message.
And I guess with that audience, you get the opportunity to give them the I've never thought about it that way feeling.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're engaging kind of true fans, well, it's like a pull. They're going to come because they already want to be there. Whereas when it's more of a business-to-business environment, you know, you're probably competing with quite a lot of other kind of brands in the space and to fill that memorability.
Yeah, I mean, take upfronts as an example, which is a period in kind of the year where lots of different tech streaming brands, for example, are doing their upfronts talking about what's next, what's on their slate. You know, that's the reason that when we talk about making the intangible tangible, that brands that are coming to us, because we're helping them create standout in a very crowded market where people are going from event to event, and they what we're hoping that we're doing is create an experience where our brand experience is front of mind, right? Because we've done something that's slightly different to the rest.
And do you think that there's any kind of last kind of bastions of fringe communities, you know, deep in Reddit or kind of other online environments? You know, is there any fans that are not accessible to brands, you know, the brands can't harness their power and their fandom?
Today's kind of, I suppose, social landscape, I don't think so. You take gaming, for an example, you take Comic-Con, for an example, they are what I would call more niche communities, but there's always a role. I think it really depends on the brand truly authentically showing up in that world. So, you know, like quite often you'll see brands go to Comic-Con doing activations that excite those fans, because they're in their world, right? And they're talking to them in there. But it's about doing it right.
We did a event for HSBC at the League of Legends World Final. And I think that we certainly all did a bit of a double take when we first got the brief, because you think kind of large corporate bank,
Doesn't match up.
Doesn't match up with. Yeah. But the way that it was applied was, I think, as authentic as it could have been, mm-hmm. in that it was tied to in-game currency. It was tied to the kind of literacy. Mm-hmm. It was designed to the kind of maps of the spaces. So they found the kind of brand points and tried to kind of pull them as much as possible. And there was also a large merch shop where the kind of transactional side of it was there. So I think that, in the moments where there is a stretch, brands are probably trying harder than ever to reach the fringe communities. That's been the importance has been recognised. Mm-hmm. And, the first example of being gaming of fringe communities, like, this is now going to be a very, very mainstream kind of component of fandom going forwards. I think
obviously live broadcasts has allowed that niche of communities to also have a peek into a world that they're super excited about, with obviously Twitch, for example. They can watch in on their favorite gamers doing things, and like when we do activations for Amazon, for example, we're trying to kind of bring that type of like gaming world sometimes in, obviously because they own Twitch. So we'll have live gamers doing live podcasts from events and stuff. So there's always ways to bring people in.
And what about how live broadcast has, become way more accessible? It's no longer just about live sports matches that, get this kind of, capture and broadcast for people to watch at home. Mm-hmm. Even much more intimate events can now access this. And, particularly in the social space, how does that bring people at home closer into the event itself?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I think there's two ways to look at it, right? There's either if it's the talent that's on stage live broadcasting to their community, you can obviously simulcast that out as a brand. Most recently, obviously, we did Live Fest. We had 600 creators in the room, all who obviously have got their own community at home. We designed Live Fest predominantly for in the room and for the people at home, to make sure that kind of the storyboarding and the story felt true and interesting for both audiences. And that's a complex job. Then you've got to think about the fact that these people in the room are holding the phones in their own right. And so I think it's become much more accessible, and across the board, I think it's a great way to bring value to an event and make sure that kind of everyone gets a sneak peek in. If it's a fashion show, for example, you can live broadcast from behind the scenes, seeing the makeup being done now, having people on the red carpet, having interviews. So I think it just makes it a bit more accessible and invites people into those worlds in a way that we couldn't do before. And truly, I suppose, is a really authentic way to ensure that no one feels left out. I think the other thing is there's this massive trend toward third place, right, in the industry. So not everyone can go to an event. You mentioned sporting. Now we're creating almost immersive experience with screens, where we're creating fan zones within, outside of the official event, where people feel like they're part of that experience, even if they can't go. So we did something most recently in America for DirecTV. We did a tailgate party where we were showing the game and invited consumers in, but also creators, obviously, and created that kind of, I suppose, third place where people could still feel the excitement and the emotion of the match, even if they couldn't get a ticket.
Absolutely, and that's that kind of gold standard of the pre, during and post event experience, that mm-hmm. if people can be on that journey for a really extended amount of time, kind of getting all the value, but then during that main moment of the experience, they're seeing it from so many different perspectives, mm-hmm. of people who are there and involved. It could be the organizers, it could be the talent, it could be the makeup artists. It's a really rich landscape now for any fan to be involved. So if we move now towards the end of the episode, just if there's any kind of main takeaways that we've kind of picked up along the way, I feel like you've been a fountain of insight.
Thanks.
So thank you so much for being with us today. Your comments on being a fan first experience every time, and really understanding the kind of cultural relevancy of the community that you're trying to engage, so that it's not just about their experience then and there, but how they can, you know, take that away to either, you know, basically push out their broadcast their content, how they can influence the people in their circles, mm-hmm. and treating them all the same, but just relevant for theirs. You know, that's definitely been the most important element for me.
Mm. Yeah, I was going to kind of agree and say, you know, it's about like knowing your audience. And if you're bringing similar people together, then that kind of shared moment is going to be amplified.
That's great. And finally, is there anything that you want to have 60 seconds on to kind of, this is your soapbox moment to stand up and kind of put your flag in the sand to say, this is what kind of is really important for yourselves?
I think you hit the nail on the head when you said about bringing experienced agents into the conversation earlier. I think we can add so much more value if we're at the heart of the strategy, and really think about how that layered kind of omni-channel approach is really going to help deliver kind of really strong business results that are going to pay back, I suppose. And for us, like, we're eager to get, you know, around the table and have conversations with as many brands as possible and show what we're really capable of.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for listening and viewing at home. This has been episode 5 of Make It Experiential. Thank you once again to Natasha Brody from Scene Presents. And we look forward to everyone joining us again soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.